Good morning. Today we are ending our year-long Shema series. Before we enter into a bit of a summer series continuing in the Gospel of Matthew. And we're looking today at a passage, a short passage, near to the end of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. So we've been looking at the Sermon on the Mount because we've been going through the sort of mini-series of what does it look like to love the Lord our God with our whole strength. So what does it look like when we look at Jesus' teachings to the disciples? What does that look like then to build discipleship within us so that we grow sturdy, we grow strength within us, so that we're not swayed by every gust of wind? That's kind of what we've been exploring. So we've looked at being salt and light, taking oaths. What does that look like? Loving our enemies, being merciful, not worrying, laying up treasure in heaven, not judging, all these things. And now, near the tail end of these teachings, Jesus gives his disciples a few warnings, almost as if to urge them that what he's been saying up to this point are not just suggestions, but rather essentials. Have you been listening to me? Here are a few warnings that I want you to be mindful of. So last week, Pastor Ed took us through that passage that talks about being careful, be watchful for false prophets and bearing good fruit. This week, we're looking at entering by the narrow gate. So if you want to turn in your Bibles, we're looking at Matthew 7, verses 13 to 14. I believe it's on page 971. Yes, 971. It's at the bottom right corner on page 971. Matthew 7, 13 and 14. Jesus says these words. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. I hope you all found the passage. I still hear pages flipping. This is the word of the Lord. Now, I want to look at the ESV translation because there's a couple words that I want to pick up on. So the ESV reads it this way. Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. But the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. So he gives us two ways here, right? Two ways. It's that simple. Wide and easy, narrow and hard. That is the ultimate choice that Jesus gives us. Should be easy, right? Well, apparently it's not so simple, is it? Because Jesus has just spent however long explaining to the disciples in all of his teachings that this is what the narrow road looks like. And now he gets to this point near the end, after talking about how we need to treat others, what kind of characteristics we need to hold on to. And when you think about all the different passages we've looked at, those are all ways that call us into a certain type of discipleship underneath his authority. And now he adds on to that at the end. Hey, guess what? It's narrow. Still narrow. Well, how much more narrow can we get? This has the capacity to be a little bit discouraging, particularly for the disciples. But I want to urge us this morning that I don't think we need to be discouraged by this or afraid of it, particularly that phrase that says, those who find it are few. As if suddenly all of us need to start having a faith crisis, like, am I actually on the pathway? I don't think that's what Jesus wants for us. I think what he's doing in this passage is emphasizing, while using a little bit of hyperbole, that there is a way, a gateway, a pathway, away from God that we need to be aware of. Okay, there's this narrow pathway that he's been guiding us in, but there is this other way that we need to be aware of. We need to be aware that regardless of how much teaching he's done, and the disciples were right there with him, you know, you can be right in Jesus' pathway, and he still has to give the warning. Heads up, there's this other pathway, this other gate. Because our inclination is always going to be towards the path of least resistance. It's always going to be towards where the most people are going. Which is why, again, Jesus' teachings here are not just suggestions for us. They are essentials because all of them have been working to guide us in a certain direction. All of his teachings are meant to guide us towards a certain gate, on a certain pathway. So it's really like Jesus is saying to us, Have you been listening? Have you been listening to me? Because all that I've been teaching you points in a certain direction. And there is another way, another pathway, another gate that is much bigger and broader and seemingly much more appealing that we need to be aware of. Now, his disciples, the Israelites, would have been very familiar with this concept of two ways, okay? Because from the very beginning of Israel's history, this was in Judaic law. Because at the law that the Lord, that Yahweh gave to them at Mount Sinai, embedded within that was this passage. Near the end of Moses' life, Yahweh speaks these words. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. If you obey the commandments of the Lord your God that I command you today, by loving the Lord your God, by walking in his ways, and by keeping his commandments and his statutes and its rules, then you shall live. That comes out of Deuteronomy. Something very similar was said to Joshua at the end of his life, and the prophet Jeremiah, something very similar. Behold, I set before you the way of life and the way of death. So for the Israelites, the choice was constantly being put in front of them, these two ways, reminding them that they were a people at the crossroads, always at the crossroads, between these two choices, faced with the choice again and again of whether they're going to depend on the Lord or whether they're going to depend on something else. You're going to trust in him? Are you going to trust in yourself or something else? As William Barclay puts it, that is the choice with Jesus now confronts his disciples. It's the same choice that Jesus is now mentioning to his disciples in this passage. There is a broad and an easy way, and there are many who take it, but the end of it is ruin. There is a narrow and a hard way, and there are a few who take it, but the end of it is life. It's the same thing going on here. So that is the one choice. This is the one choice that Jesus is pointing at, which is continuous with the Old Testament then. It's that same choice that he's giving us today. Ultimately, the ultimate choice in our human existence is one of these two pathways. Every other decision depends on this initial choice, okay? It's not like this is the only choice we ever have in life, but this is the first choice. This is the choice of priority that then every other choice depends on. So let's explore these two options. Looking at the wide and the easy road first, the Greek word here for this wide pathway has the sense of roomy, spaciousness, wide, broad. There are lounge chairs in this space. You can come and go as you want. It's not committal. It's non-committal. It doesn't require any of the self-sacrifice and the service and the submission that Jesus was talking about. There's no discipline needed. Plenty of room for various options, permissiveness, opinions. For Israel, this sort of wide, spacious broadness, that lifestyle, was found in the other deities. Sort of like the ancient version of consumerism. You can pray to whatever god you want and get whatever you want out of it. In theory, as an Israelite, I can have whatever I want whenever I want it. I just need to pray to the right god. That was the comfortability that they kept falling into, the idolatry that they kept falling into. For us, it's quite similar. I can get what I want, whenever I want it, however I can manage it. But it's all about expediency for us, right? And ease and comfort. We live in the days of fast food, high-speed internet, two-day shipping, instant messaging, tap credit cards, instant pudding, whatever. All the things, it's all about convenience. It's all about getting it as quickly as we can, whenever we want it, however we want it. We don't need to wait on God. So it's really about us, about our own security, about how much productivity we can have in a day, how busy we can be, our popularity, our ability to own a house, our families, our jobs, our cell phones, all of the options, the plentiful options that our North American society gives us. We have so many options, constantly being faced with choice. I can pick the color of my car. I can pick the style of my clothes. I can pick one out of 50 different salad dressings at Safeway. Seriously, I counted them. It's 52. And that's so appealing to us because it makes us feel authoritative. any less than that, and not having those kinds of choices would feel so limiting. This is why this broad and pathway is so appealing to this. This wide, option, full, comfortable pathway is so appealing. There's so many more options. There's so many more avenues. But that's why, as John Stott writes, that this whole two-choice thing from Jesus is kind of jarring for us because it feels so limiting. You got to sit in the front row, man.
I'm totally kidding.
That's why it's so jarring for us, right? Because there's only two options. We'd all prefer to have a few more, options. Maybe he could have given us a selection of things. Maybe different levels. Like when you're picking a credit card, you can pick Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and then there's different, amounts that you can pay every year to get more out of it. Or like when you go to fill up your car with fuel, you've got your regular, your supreme, and your premium. Like maybe one day I want to be a regular disciple. Tomorrow I'll try to be a premium. It'd be nice. It'd be nice to be able to do that. Because ultimately, it should be up to me. I should be able to choose these things. That's my right. I am my own authority in this pathway. It's really easy. It almost feels like I'm not making a choice at all because it's that simple. On this pathway, on this well-worn pathway, this gate, it's the most available, the most comfortable, the most popular, the most efficient. Again, as Stott writes, there is plenty of room on this pathway for diversity of opinions, laxity of morals. It's the road of tolerance and permissiveness. It has no curves, no boundaries of either thought or conduct. I can think however I want. I can feel however I want. Travelers on this road follow their own inclinations, that is, the desires of the human heart. I can get what I want whenever I want it. But he adds to this, actually, that ... is of the human heart and its fallenness. That's the key here, recognizing that our human heart and its inclinations are fallen. Because as Eugene Peterson laments in his book, A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, this is the result of following our own inclinations. Everyone is in a hurry. The persons whom I lead and worship, among whom I counsel, visit, pray, preach, and teach, want shortcuts. They are impatient for results. They have adopted the lifestyle of a tourist. Get what I want whenever I want it, pick what I want whenever I want it, and only want the high points. But the Christian life cannot mature under such conditions and in such ways. There's the catch. We are called to mature. The Christian is called to mature on the long road of obedience in the same direction. Sorry, folks, there's only one option here. It's commitment. It's dependence. It's grueling. It's hard. Well, that doesn't sound very appealing at all, does it? And that's exactly what the wide and easy and broad road is trying to discourage us from. Everything on this road is about instant gratification, choosing the things that feel good, having the options and the security and the shortcuts that can just help us eat, sleep, and be merry and get on with our life. We've all heard that before. Why do you choose always the difficult things? Just enjoy life. Enjoy life. But we need to understand this. That is not the Christian way. And Jesus doesn't give us exactly a very comfortable alternative here. Looking now at the other gateway, or the other way, the word here for hard could be kind of loosely translated as pressed together. So we're talking a little bit more like elbow to elbow, shoulder to shoulder, a little bit more restricted. In contrast to the wide spaciousness, roominess of the other pathway. This is very different. And only a few, the ones who are really looking for it, will find it. This pathway requires focus, intentionality, discipline. If we follow Jesus' earlier teachings, it is always the pathway of laying oneself down. of laying one's authority down, of submitting oneself. It is the way that is the pathway of greatest resistance because it is not in alignment at all with what our natural inclinations want to do. We have to train ourselves to do what Jesus earlier said. Right? That doesn't come easy. We have to train ourselves from a very young age to be not, to be unselfish, non-selfish, or whatever it is, unselfish, to not be selfish, to not always want to do things our own way, to put others first. We have to train ourselves. So evidently, the harder road is the one that leads to a deeper personhood. The depth of my character and the broadening of my heart, soul, mind, strength, what we've just been talking about over the last year, comes not by doing things that come naturally to me, but constantly refining myself, reframing how I think, reforming myself under the authority of Jesus Christ. Think about those who are professional writers or professional athletes and the disciplines that it takes to pursue what they want to pursue. They're setting aside earthly pleasures. They're intentional. They manage their time a certain way. Why would we look at our Christian life any differently if this is our main priority? If you want to grow deeply in relationship with somebody, you don't just have one coffee date. It takes years of conversations, coffee dates, excursions to get to know somebody. And even then, down the road, you're still discovering new things about this person you didn't realize before. Those of you who are married understand this, who have been married for many years. You're still learning about who your spouse is. Why would we think about our journey with Christ any differently when he's meant to be our main priority? The Message translation has Jesus saying it this way: don't look for shortcuts to God. The market is flooded with surefire, easygoing formulas for a successful life that can be practiced in your spare time. Don't fall for that stuff. Don't fall for that stuff. Even though crowds of people do, the way to life, to God, is vigorous and requires our total attention. Peterson writes elsewhere in Run with the Horses, he says, sorry folks, crowds lie. The more people, the less truth. Integrity is not strengthened by multiplication. And then he adds this, we can test this observation quite easily. Which promise is most likely to be kept? A politician speaking to thousands of people? Or the promise exchanged between two friends? What are you more likely to trust? Every time, he writes, that we reject the habits of the crowd and practice the disciplines of faith, we become a little more alive. In other words, don't look at what the big groups of people are doing and think that they have it all right, that they've got the right model or method, that they know what they're doing. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. But a good practice is to always question the crowds. If everyone is on social media, if everyone is watching Game of Thrones, buying Birkenstocks, picking an electric car, thinking a certain way about a political issue, if that's what everyone is doing, I should step back and question this. Because if my initial choice has been to be under the authority of Jesus Christ and his teachings, how does that then affect all my other choices? In our church, in the way that we go about things, it's always been done this way. Everybody does it this way. This is what's most popular. This is what's attracting the most people. Okay, that may be the case, but perhaps there's a better way. Perhaps there's another way that more accurately points to Christ. Maybe. As Christians, we don't ever jump into things uncritically or blindly, thinking that that's the way to do it. We are disciples and pilgrims of Christ, which means that we are always in a growing, learning, reforming, reframing relationship with him. going somewhere, and that somewhere is to God. We are always pointing ourselves to him, so we don't go into things blindly or uncritically. We do the research. The way of Jesus Christ is the way of the cross, nothing less. Nothing, then, for our own gain, for our own pride or self-esteem or for our own benefit. So this way is hard. It's trying. It's brutal. It's wilderness. It's constant dependence. And more often than not, it's what people look at us and go, that's weird. Why would you do that? Why would you commit to that? Doesn't make sense. But the fire that is fueled within us by the Holy Spirit, when we commit to this way and we stick on it, affirms us and assures us that this is the way everlasting. It's the Holy Spirit who speaks to us and says, this is the way. Walk in it. Trust me. Depend on me. It is the narrow pathway. It is the way of most resistance. It is the long road of obedience in the same direction. But it's the way that holds us steady. Doesn't allow us to be swifted and swayed by every gust of wind. It's the only way that empowers us to be lovers of Jesus Christ in this world, proclaiming his victory when everything else tells us we should be proclaiming our own victories. Which is why this way has never ceased to be relevant or applicable. Ever since Jesus said it for the first time, in that culture, in that society, it challenged the narrative. It's always done that. Because in every society and in every culture, the inclination is always to pursue our own interests, to do what feels good for ourselves. His ways, his words have never ceased to be relevant. To be a disciple, then, as Dale Bruner puts it, is to be in the moral minority. We're all minorities here, folks. So if you don't like being a minority, you best be getting out of the church. Because we're all minorities. We must be prepared to go the way of greatest resistance. To follow the little flock rather than the herd. To be okay with hardship and wilderness, where we follow Jesus' teachings as best as we possibly can and suffer maybe the backlash, not because though we're afraid of his wrath, but because we love him so much that we actually trust that he has our best intentions in mind. He has our best interests in mind. And the longer that we're on this narrow pathway, the more we live into it, the less we are swayed by the resistance, the less daunted we are by the trials, the more content we're able to be in all of our circumstances, as Paul says, and the more mature we become to walk this way out. And then Jesus' words later on in Matthew 11 make so much more sense when he says, take my yoke upon you. Walk on my narrow road. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Because although the way is narrow and hard, the longer we're on it, the more we recognize that this is the only way where there is freedom. And then we realize more and more that his yoke is in fact easy and his burden light, because it's all about him. It's all about being in deeper relationship with him. Consider this example, and I'll finish here with this. Imagine an airport. Really big airport with multiple gates. You've recently arrived from another flight, and you have to make it to your connecting flight in order to get to your final destination. But due to a delay, you've arrived really late, and you only have about 10 minutes to make it to your next flight. So you look at the screen where all of the flights are listed, and you search for your flight, hoping for a delay. But it's on time. And you start to panic because it's in gate Q35. Where on earth is gate Q35? Why does an airport even have a terminal queue? Whatever. The main issue here is that you have no time to make it to this flight. Speedy Gonzalez couldn't make it to this flight. Coincidentally, though, you look at the departures list, and you see there is another airline going to almost the exact same place as yours. At least that's what it says. And the gate is right across from you. Right there. This gate is huge. Crowds of people. It's apparently a really popular flight. And you look at the screen and discover they're advertising that there's one seat left on this flight. It's an exit row. Extra leg room. This is starting to feel like a no-brainer to you. You look at the gate right in front of you. It's right there. It's not the flight you booked. But, you know, pay a little extra and you can bring on whatever you want. There's no limit to the carry-on items. You don't have to leave anything behind. There's no risk involved. And it's right there. The other gate is on the other side of the airport in some small, obscure, totally different terminal, hard to find, easy to miss, and to enter it, you probably have to deny yourself and check your bag. Ugh. Perhaps they are waiting for you. But it feels so far away, so inconvenient, and the thought of getting there is enough to cause a fierce anxiety within you. But you're still torn. Your ticket says gate Q35. That's what it says. That's where you know you're supposed to go. But the other gate is so appealing, and they give you free drinks, and you don't have to pay for your meals. Suddenly, however, you look up at the screen again, and you notice that your original flight has actually been delayed an extra 15 minutes. That might be just enough time. It's almost as if they were actually waiting for you. That never happens. Whatever. In a split second, you commit. You rush. You run. You put all your effort into it. You bolt through this airport, frantically searching for this terminal as if it's a lost credit card. You're looking everywhere, asking people, have you seen it? You have to find this gate. And all along the way, you're worrying, am I going to make it? Am I running fast enough? This is crazy. Will this all be for nothing? Are they actually waiting for me? Is there a point? After making a number of wrong turns and having to ask a barista for directions, finally you get there. You're huffing and puffing as you approach the small, obscure gate tucked away in a little corner. There's no one sitting in the waiting area. Oddly enough, the door is still open, but you look at your Fitbit, and although you've burned 200 calories, you're way past the 15-minute mark. So, feeling defeated, really tired, and just trying to hold it together, you approach the counter and admit to the airline attendant standing behind it that you were meant to be on this flight. This was the flight you were supposed to be on. You knew it. And you ask if there's any chance that you can still make it on. And then catching you completely off guard, the attendant looks at you, smiles, passes you a water bottle, grabs your hand, and with a thick southern drawl says, of course you can, honey. You didn't need to worry or rush. We knew you was coming. But we're on our own timetable here. We would have waited all day for you. Because you see, at this gate, it ain't about you. It's about him. And at the end of that there narrow walkway, is a father waiting for his child to come home.